Today on Straight Talk Africa, the 23rd ordinary session of the African Union Summit has come and gone. Some observers wonder whether the event provided African solutions to African problems, or whether, as some critics say, the forum is merely a venue for talking the talk without walking the talk. That's coming up next, right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa. It's Wednesday, July 2nd. I am Shaka Salih.
And hello to you, Shaka.
And Haruma Liyama.
And hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Mariama Diallo, your social media reporter.
Today, we'll discuss the recent gathering of African leaders at the 23rd Ordinary Summit held in Malabo and their efforts to address urgent concerns facing the continent.
Well, many urgent concerns indeed, Shaka. Coming up later in our STA inbox, we'll share your thoughts on the summit and the effectiveness of the African Union in general. Hope you'll stay with us.
But first, the theme of the summit was the Year of Agriculture and Food Security. But as in summits past, the greater focus was on combating terrorism and resolving conflicts. My colleague Paul Sisco has more on the story.
Heads of state and other dignitaries to the recently completed African Union summit in the Equatorial Guinean capital, Malabo, were greeted with traditional pomp and fanfare. Among the first to speak to the gathering was United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon.
I commend the African Union on its resolve to end hunger and malnutrition by 2025. You have demonstrated your commitment by declaring 2014 the year of African agriculture and food security and making it the theme of this summit.
Summit host, Equatorial Guinea's president, Teodoro Obiang Nguema Mabasogo, asked African countries to invest heavily in their agricultural sectors, decreasing dependence on the developed world, and to significantly reduce hunger in their countries, adding the many rich natural resources on the continent have not been harnessed fully to the benefit of citizens. 70% of the world's uncultivated arable land is in Africa, yet the continent derives little or no wealth from it. Nigeria's President Goodluck Jonathan made a quick return to Abuja to respond to ongoing terrorism in the Nigerian capital. Peace and security was an overriding concern in light of conflicts in South Sudan, Central African Republic, Boko Haram in Nigeria, and Al-Shabaab in Somalia and Kenya. Speaker after speaker condemned the crisis in Nigeria while praising peace efforts in Mali, Guinea-Bissau, and Egypt. The summit welcomed back the presidents of Egypt, Mali, and Guinea-Bissau. The three countries have suffered civil and political unrest. The delegates discussed a number of issues of mutual concern, among them delays in implementing the African Standby Force expected by 2015. Officials have voiced skepticism that the 5,000-strong force under discussion for more than a decade will be ready, prompting African leaders to approve a stopgap rapid reaction force last year. Paul Sisco, VOA News.
Thanks, Paul, for that report. Now joining us here in our Washington studios are two distinguished guests. Fred Oradeinde, president of the Foundation for Democracy in Africa, a Washington-based non-profit, non-partisan organization that promotes participatory democracy, sustainable development, and economic growth throughout Africa. Well, Fred, it's always a pleasure, of course, to host you on Straight Talk Africa.
Shaka, it's my pleasure, and thank you for inviting me again.
You're most welcome. How come this time you didn't attend the African Union Summit?
There were also competing priorities, and we're working, as you know, on some of our programs, including the reauthorization of the African Growth and Opportunity Act. Mm-hmm. And my organization is the Secretariat. We're planning to have a big event here in Washington from the 1st to the 2nd of August.
I see. Yeah. Well, Ni Akwete, an independent analyst on African and international affairs, he is the founder of the Democracy and Conflict Research Institute, based in his homeland of Ghana. Well, Ni, what can I say? It's equally always a pleasure, frankly, to host you on Straight Talk Africa.
It's my honor
You're most welcome, sir. And last but not least, expected to be joining us is Elastus Mwencha, the Deputy Chairperson of the African Union Commission, who joins us via telephone link-up from the Ethiopian capital of Addis Ababa. Good evening, Mr. Mwencha.
Good evening, sir. How are you?
I am hugely terrific. It is a pleasure, of course, to host you once again on Straight Talk Africa, especially given that...
Thank you very much.
Yeah, it was a pleasure, of course, to meet you in the Hub of Peace, Dar es Salaam.
Most welcome. Thank you.
You're most welcome, sir. Later in the program, we'll give you, the audience, a chance to call and talk with our guests. The number to call is 202-619-3111. The U.S. country code is 1. Let me stay with you, Elastus Mwencha. You attended the summit in Marabo, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Was it, in fact, in Marabo or was it in Sipopo? Sipopo, the luxurious summit city.
Well, Marabo is the town, Sipopo is the location. So it is in Sipopo, Marabo.
I see. What would you tell us about the summit? Was it a success in as far as you are concerned? And if so, why?
Yes, the summit was a success from several points of view. This is a regular summit. But of course, being a regular summit, there is a theme. And this year, the theme of the summit was on agriculture. And I think this was extensively discussed. And of course, this being a year-long theme, a lot of work has already been done at the national level, at the regional level, and at the continental level. So the summit was just a culmination of the discussion on the theme of agriculture.
I see.
The summit also discussed a number of key issues that are of interest to the continent, of course, the peace and security, the development issues ranging from, say, infrastructure. And here I should point out that we're seeing a breakthrough in implementation of what you would call regional projects. We now have projects like in the energy sector, like Inga, that Member States have shown a lot of interest. We also have the African Development Bank and others that have supported it. And these projects now look visible and implementable. Other programs that were discussed, including the social sector, a lot of progress that is being made in the health sector, HIV/AIDS, malaria, but also social security as a whole. And of course, there was also an agenda on international issues. As you know, that there is now post-2015 agenda, and Africa has taken a common position on that. There is also the climate change. Africa has taken a position on that. And there is the UN reform, other than other international issues. So there was quite a lot of activity, a lot of discussions, but what you also see is the progress that the continent is making in terms of growth, in terms of development, but also concerns that the continent is looking at largely in the area of peace and security. And we are now seeing this rising terrorism that the continent discussed in detail and agreed that this is an area that we need now to address specifically as a continent.
Now, Elastus, the last time I checked, the summit was, in fact, last held in the same place, Marabo, back in 2011. How come in 2014 you had to go back to Marabo?
Well, that's a good question, Siaka. Originally, this summit was supposed to be held in Libreville. But of course, the authorities in Libreville felt that they had not made enough progress in terms of having all the necessary facilities. As you know, our AU summit is quite large, and so they opted not to host it this time round. And normally when a host country has passed on that, hosting arrangement, it is open for anyone else then to chip in. And of course, then of course, Equatorial Guinea stepped in and hosted the summit again.
How do you respond to some critics who say that there is in some way some moral issues here, especially given that that place, the new city called Sipopo, is a city, frankly, that is characterized as a sort of luxury resort. And yet, as far as human rights groups are concerned, when you look at the fact that 75% of the people in Equatorial Guinea live on less than $2 a day, they really don't see any justification, frankly, why Africa should meet there to discuss about major issues that affect the people on the continent.
Well, the disconnect of what you might call resource-rich industries in terms of what you see as, say, gross national product vis-a-vis the poverty that you see in the country, it's not a story that is limited to Equatorial Guinea. It's a story that is for most developing countries that export from an enclave like oil, where these extractive industries don't have much impact to the rest of the economy. And that's why, from the African perspective, we've been saying we have to change this model to have a model that is inclusive in terms of growth, that brings on board, but also transformational, not simply exporting crude oil or exporting minerals, timber, and what have you. And so the story of Equatorial Guinea is a story of Africa. So I think this is an ideal place then to see, as you rightly mentioned, Equatorial Guinea, if you look at the GDP per capita, it's over 20,000, yet that impact will not translate to the ordinary person who probably would not be anywhere near 23,000, that is average GDP. But that is the story of Africa, as I said at the beginning, where you have all these exclusive industries that export but have no impact to the rest of the economy.
But is that really the issue, Elastus? So is it, in fact, an issue where you have a leader, frankly, who could be characterized as perhaps being socially, economically and politically insensitive to his own people?
Are you denying what I've just said, that in many African countries you can see you are exporting, but then when you look at the economy, there is no impact? And I don't know, I mean, I don't want to use this forum of yours to start discussing individuals, and I'm not in a position to discuss those kind of issues, but really, I mean, what I've said is true, first of all. And you can go fishing for other reasons, but what I've said is true, that in Africa, the impact of what we might call resource-rich industries is not inclusive to the rest of the economy. And I think this is where we should be addressing the issue, because if you look at many African countries, yes, you export these raw materials. But if we were to transform them, and you can name them, whether you look at copper, you look at iron ore that we have, you look at diamond, all these, in fact, the translation of Africa's exports, it is said for every $1 that remains in Africa, 15 is made out there.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see, even if Africa got, say, 5 out of this, it would have impact in Africa. And I think, if you don't address this real issue, well, then I don't know. I mean, that is a fact, what I've just said. It's a fact.
You have a point. We'll get back to that later. Before we pause for a short break, we would like to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is on the social networking website Facebook. Just enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa, become a fan, and connect with other friends of the Voice of America. We'll be right back with you, so please don't go away.
The African Union was first envisioned at a 1999 summit in Libya. It later replaced the Organization of African Unity, which was created in 1963. The AU Constitution was entered into force in May 2001, and the group was formally established in July of 2002. The African Union is a partnership between governments and all segments of African civil society, particularly women, youth, and the private sector. The African body has 54 member states, and its newest member is South Sudan, which became independent on July 9, 2011. Morocco is the only African state that's not a member.
Up nonstop, voafootball.com.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. What is your opinion about today's topic? Call us at 202-619-3111. U.S. country code 1. When you call, remember the following. Ask only one question. Keep your comment brief and turn down the volume on your radio or television. Now let's return to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui, and of course, welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, coming to you live from Washington. Let me come to you, Fred. You obviously followed your fellow panelist, Mr. Moincha. He does have some legitimate, I think, explanations as to why, of course, Africa lags behind in terms of development and what have you. And one could say, frankly, yes, they are both external and internal factors that are responsible for this. When we talk about a country like Equatorial Guinea, which has been generous and kind enough to hold the AU summit in less than 5 years out of 54 member countries of the AU, and yet when you look at the reality on the ground, here is a man, Teodoro Obiang Nguema, frankly, who has enormous resources, more resources than people on his territory. And yet, he cannot, frankly, deliver very basic services. How does it feel for Africa to go and celebrate and talk about important things, frankly, that affect the more than 1 billion people on that continent?
You know, Shaka, I listened very carefully to Erastus, and I do agree with him. This is a process. And if you ask me what are the most important points that were discussed during the last summit, I'll focus on those issues that deals with intra-Africa trade and look at how we can bring in place the continental free trade area. How do we address the issues of ensuring that indigenous African producers, particularly in the ag sector, how do we get them into the value chain and how do we get them into the supply chain? When we are able to address that, we will move the process of political freedom and economic freedom to the next level. The transformation that is going on in Africa right now is very critical. In fact, one that I find at a very important point. The discussions that were held and the discussions that were made and the decisions that were made in trying to make sure that we stand up the continental free trade area by 2015 seems to me to be the highlight of what happened in Malabo. Coming behind that also is what will be the common position of member states regarding the decisions at the World Trade Organization that took place in Bali. These are bread and butter issues And when these issues are fully put in place and we have the institutions that would ensure that there's intra-Africa trade going on and would also make sure that we have full engagement of citizens at different levels, including smallholder farmers, including small producers. The question of what we're discussing now about, if we look at the United States, before we had progressive members of Congress, we had the baron, the rubber barons.
Yes, yes.
And so this is a transformation process. And as we have progressive people who come into the political space.
But Fred, you mentioned something very important.
You mentioned something very important
about what you characterized as bread and butter issues.
Issues, yes.
Bread and butter issues for who?
For the African people.
Which people?
The people of
Equatorial
Guinea? No, no. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about engaging the ordinary citizens. How do we bring them into the economic and the political process? The way things are now, and before the transformation of the OAU to AU, we didn't have the kind of framework we have now. If you take a look at some of the decisions that were taken in Malabo, mm-hmm. these are issues that are standing up institutions mm-hmm. that will fully guarantee participation of the African people in their own economic and political process. And as we go beyond that, and we have these institutions doing right, and we're able to see, let's me give you another example. There was that discussion about the EPA, which is the Economic Partnership with Africa, which the EU has been proposing. And there is now a deadline of 1st of October that some countries would have to sign the EPA, even if it's not in the interest of Africa. These difficult discussions were made, and a common position has been taken mm-hmm. that we have to look at the African interest.
I see.
The Africa. We looked at also the reauthorization of AGOA. These discussions were made, and now we hope that when the heads of state and the ministers are here in Washington for the discussion on reauthorization of AGOA, that would also have a common position that will protect the interests of the African people.
We can talk about that and, of course, spend, frankly, the entire summer discussing that.
Yeah.
What about you, Nia Kwete? Could you please weigh in this? There is a saying that charity begins at home. How can somebody have resources that he is, at least on an individual level or on a family level, he's able to use it or misuse it the way he wants and does not pay attention to the fundamental needs of his own people? We are talking about education. We are talking about health care. We're talking about jobs, jobs, jobs.
Absolutely. And Shaka, I very much sympathize with the thought behind your question that the wealth is in Equatorial Guinea, where the summit was held. You've got fancy facilities. If you go a few miles away, people, the citizens, don't seem to be enjoying it. And the question is why? My answer is lack of democracy. I think democracy has to come first. What does democracy mean? It means that the people choose who will hold power. And after they choose who holds power, they also constantly monitor to say, here are our priorities. It is not what you think, it's what the people who have the problems think. So if jobs are is what they want, they get jobs. If health is the issue. So I will say that weak democracy in Equatorial Guinea is at the core of the issue. Now, my brother, the deputy chairperson of the African Union, he's a diplomat. He serves the whole assembly. He cannot afford to single out one person. It's not his bailiwick. But
no.
I think that people who watch the issue realize that, you know, there's been a long debate going on, authoritarian development. Let's get a strong man who will ram through development, what he thinks is great. China is a perfect example of that. They don't have multi-party democracy. I always thought that was wrong, and I think that is what you are seeing, that you must strengthen democracy so that the people elect their leaders, and then they tell the leaders what they want. And I think that is the problem in Equatorial Guinea, weak democracy.
It's very interesting that you talk about democracy. As a matter of fact, the last election that was held in Equatorial Guinea, President Teodoro Obiang Nguema got at least 97% of the vote. He's also actually, in recent years, been honored by Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni, in his words, not mine, for promoting democracy in Africa. Is that the sort of democracy you're talking about?
Absolutely not. In fact, it's the opposite. First of all, President Museveni has been in power, I remember very well, January of 1986. Okay, we are getting
29th.
Yes, mm-hmm. I mean, so he's been there a long time. When he first, his very first speech at the Africa Union, he chastised leaders for staying too long and for not paying attention to democracy. He's been there. We don't even, there are signs that he's not going to step down soon. And so that kind of democracy, which benefits the sitting leaders, is not the democracy I am talking about. I'm talking about vibrant democracy. So, I mean, and you see it in some countries in Africa, South Africa, Ghana, Nigeria. I mean, the elections may not be perfect,
Mauritius.
But leaders, Mauritius,
you
leaders.
You could talk about Zambia.
Exactly. And I think that. So what I'm saying is, look, democracy and development are linked, but I opt for democratic development where people determine. Democracy has to come first, so we know that the leaders are speaking for their people, not leaders who come through to power and manipulate the issue. Now, I do have to give the Africa Union a bit of credit, because they have said for a while now that unconstitutional changes of government are not allowed. But I think they need to go a step further and see people who manipulate elections. Now they've
rigged
outlawed
elections.
Coups. Yes, yeah. Rigged elections. Because, you know, Mr. Nguema is not the only one who gets something in 97%. Egypt was there. We saw President Sisi, who used to be Field Marshal Sisi,
yes.
Who a year ago threw out President Morsi. And then wrote a new
constitution.
Democratically elected. That's right. Mm. And wrote a new constitution. So, in fact, I think democracy has made some progress in Africa, but there are pockets where it has not. And I think, in fact, if you forget democracy and think you can develop through the strongman approach, it does not work. And
let's
I think that's
the
problem.
Let's go to the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone callers. Good evening, Patrick from Nigeria. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Yeah, good evening, Mr. Shaka. Patrick O'Crawford by name, and good evening, our guest.
Usually terrific.
My question to our guest is this. You are talking about trade and free trade in Africa as part of the discussions at the Malabo Summit. Now, looking at the situation now in Africa as a continent, insecurity is ravaging the situation. How do you expect an investor to come under this condition? Look at what is happening in Kenya, yes, where a governor was discovered as a member of one of the terrorist groups in Kenya. And look at what the Al-Shabaab said in Somalia, that they will make this period on government. And you come back to Nigeria. Now, look at what is happening within the Northeast state, where do you expect an investor to come under this condition?
Thank you. Thank you so much. We'll have to come to you a little bit later. You are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of a discussion in a moment. But first, here is Mariama Jaro. Take it away, Mariama.
Well, still to come, we'll reveal some of the outstanding feedback we've received from our audience through social media. But now, here is our letter of the week from a fan commenting on the effectiveness of the AU in general.
Bior Agwek in Nairobi, Kenya writes, "The AU has not been able to address peace and security effectively. The ongoing wars and the emergence of militia groups within the continent is a clear indication of a failed African Union. We are heading back to the dark days of struggle for independence in Africa. We no longer have those sons of Africa whose zeal and synergies were dedicated to freeing Africans. The leaders we have now as head of states and governments cannot compare to our founding fathers. They are just the products of Western intoxication and installations to ruin Africa."
Like Voice of America on Facebook. Follow VOA on Twitter. Join VOA on our YouTube channel. Like, follow, join VOA.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number 202-619-3111. And the U.S. country code is 1. Call us collect and we'll pay for the call. Or call direct and we'll call you right back. Remember to keep your questions brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
Welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. Once again, it's time to bring in my colleague and social media reporter, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. The commitment of African leaders to build an African-wide rapid response capacity to address crises on the continent is under intense scrutiny. In recent years, two French-led military interventions have stopped Mali and the Central African Republic from total state collapse. The need for these foreign interventions cannot be overemphasized in the absence of decisive actions on the part of African states to provide immediate rapid reaction capacities. Well, with all that said, we're going to look at our question of the week, which asks, how effective is the AU in addressing peace and security on the continent? Well, let's begin right away with a comment from Christopher Boalia from Lusaka in Zambia, who writes, the AU is not effective. If it was, the U.S. would not have had to support the ouster of an African leader such as Muammar Gaddafi in Libya. Well, another posting comes from Rashid Kiliza in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, who says, because of ongoing strife, try convincing the people of Nigeria, South Sudan, Central African Republic, Mali, Libya, DRC, and the coastal region of Kenya that there is something called the African Union. Well, Shaka and guests, that's an absolutely pertinent question. We also had a caller earlier, Patrick, I think, from Nigeria, who raised that same issue.
Well, let's go to Festus. Mr. Mwencha, are you there?
Yes, I am.
How do you respond to that? You obviously have heard someone alleging that the institution that you work for, even though I know you are a very hard-working man, is not effective.
Well, obviously, if there are still some challenges in Africa, one will always try to say, well, somebody's not addressed them, so the institution is not effective. But I think it's important for us to look at track record, and the statistics speak for themselves. You know, Shaka, if you look at 10 years ago and you yourself know, you come from Uganda, you would know that 10 years ago there were no less than maybe 15 battles, you know, in Africa, interstate and intrastate. Today, even with the number, and I could see that Boali and the group are trying to count them, you can't get even 6-5. Now, what has happened? It is because of the intervention. There is effort, and I don't think it is fair for you to say that nothing has been done. Well, look, you can see this on the ground. We have boots in the ground in Somalia. We have boots in the ground in Sudan. We have boots in the ground in Central Africa and Mali. This was not visible. This was not even something you would have imagined more than 10 years ago. And of course, these challenges, the issue of peace is evolving. 10 years ago, you didn't have this kind of terrorism where one individual can cause mass destruction, killing more people and destruction to property and lives and so forth. And so, yes, this is where effectiveness comes in, because we are in that learning curve to address this new phenomenon of terrorism. And of course, I mean, I don't think that it's only Africa that is grappled with this kind of challenge. It's a global phenomenon. And you can see this happening. By the way, if I was to give you these statistics, and any one of you can, and I want to challenge you, go and look at, say, Asia, Southeast Asia. There are more coups there. Anything that is happening in Africa, you will see it there. But that region is still developing. Investment is going there. Africa has had this big challenge of perception. And this is the narrative that we want to change. A continent of wars, a continent of famine, a continent of corruption.
But this is changing. Because okay. even this element that we say, well, we must have democracy, and democracy brings development. I disagree. I mean, I want you to look at even the theory of literature. When many of these countries, the so-called developed, were developing, it is a time when they were practicing colonialism, oppression, mm-hmm. and yet they were growing. I mean, you can see even the theory that has been propagated, shows that the tigers were developing under what was called benevolent dictatorship. Yes, there is corruption in Africa. There is war in Africa, but this is exaggerated.
We agree that, of course, democracy is a work in progress, but there are, frankly, certain situations that need to change and must change. Mariama, absolutely. Any more feedback to share with our audience, please?
Well, we'll move on to another comment from Mikael Mauzeni, writing from Scandinavia, precisely from the Danish capital, Copenhagen. He says, the African Union will remain toothless because of a lack of funds. Most of the money contributed by its members go to pay office holders instead of improving its structure, implementing peace policies, and helping to alleviate poverty. Let's take a look at another one while we're at it. Kanala Moses of Kampala in Uganda, who says, I think the AU has tried to restore peace to the continent, but due to the barriers within these countries, their efforts have not yet been fruitful. Well, Shaka, looks like the comments were very, very critical today, but someone like Moses, whom I just read his comment, in this case, decided to play the devil's advocate with a glimmer of hope, even if the AU has been around for over 50 years.
Now, Fred, you listen to that. Of course, you can weigh in, but how can an institution such as the African Union, which has absolutely no sovereign powers, be expected, frankly, to be a major engine of change when we know that it is, in fact, as an institution, a reflection of the sum total of its membership? And you cannot give me more than 15, really. I'm even stretching too far, perhaps more than 10 countries that have reached a reasonable degree of democracy.
You know, Shaka, that's a very good point. And as you know, I head the Foundation for Democracy in Africa. Democracy is the primary focus of my organization. But we have to understand what democracy is. Democracy has to be owned. One of the interests in which my organization invested a lot of time in the transformation from the OAU to the AU is the point you've just made. It is now an organization that is not just leader-focused. It has been put in a position to represent the interests of the African people, not necessarily the African leaders. The big difference in the Constitutive Act of this new African Union and the prior OAU, which a lot of us worked for to put in place, is to put that transformation in place. We do have that transformation. Then we have to look at the progress that has been made. In terms of democratic reforms, we are seeing parliaments that are in place being empowered. They need to be more empowered. We've seen the African Union spending significant amount of resources in trying to put in place within Africa institutions that will be able to make sure that the ownership of this democracy is within the people of the different countries in Africa. And having said all of that, democracy is not a cheap preposition. It is an expensive preposition. Until we can create an economic framework, an economic framework that allows African democracy to be owned by the African people. And that is why the issue of intra-Africa trade becomes very important. When you have Africans who own economic interests in Africa, they will protect those interests at their own cost, because that is their wealth. Now, when you have few leaders who are corrupt, you've mentioned some nations, those few leaders do not, because they didn't own, they stole those money.
Are they really few?
I mean, even if you said all of the leaders are.
Not
if you
all
put,
of the leaders, no, but are they really few?
I'm going to go, let us just even use just...
Unfortunately, the time happens not to be our best ally.
Let us put
I
it
really
on the population,
to go,
on the 1 billion people in Africa, it is very few.
We'll come back, yeah. We'll come to that later. Thanks, Mariama, for bringing us this week's audience reaction.
Fred, apologies. I'm sure you'll be able to get back to the conversation in a few minutes. Well, we appreciate everybody's feedback, whether it's in social media form or using other means to communicate to us. Please keep them coming. And if you are a new fan, just drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com. Or post your comment on our Facebook page. Just enter the keywords, Straight Talk Africa. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com, or you can simply join our YouTube channel. Just subscribe to VOA TV to Africa. Now, let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program.
Next week on Straight Talk Africa, all eyes are on the World Cup these days. No African teams remain, but several African players will be on the pitch for the final. More World Cup action next week, right here on Straight Talk Africa.
And if you have just joined us, our topic for today is about the recent gathering of African leaders at the 23rd Ordinary Summit held in Malabo and their efforts to address urgent concerns facing the continent. Our distinguished guests are Fred Oladende, President of the Foundation for Democracy in Africa, Ni Akwete, an independent analyst on African and international affairs, and last but not least, Elastus Mwencha, the Deputy Chairperson of the African Union Commission, who joins us via telephone link up from the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. Well, gentlemen, I have to say frankly that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the three of you here.
Thank you very much.
It was a pleasure being part of this.
Let me go to the lifeline of the show, which are the callers, really. Let me go to Majok from South Sudan. Good evening, Majok. You are most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you, Shakaso, and Straight Talk Africa. And also thank you to the guest.
You're most welcome,
in the
sir.
Studio. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've listened to the guest and you, Shakaso, and people are talking about democracy. My question goes to the guest. And the question is there a democracy violation in Africa? And if yes or no, is an African Union has a mechanism to stop those who are violation the democracy? For example, in southern Sudan, to what had happened a few months ago, there is a government has been elected by the people and all the institutions of the government. And the same leaders who are being elected are the one violating the right of the people. Is there a violation of democracy in Africa? That is my question.
Thank you, Majok. How do you respond to that, Ni Akwete?
Oh, yes. I mean, I think that, you know, the way some people put it is either a glass half full or a glass
half empty.
I think there is, the way Majok put it, there is a violation of democracy in Africa because no country is perfectly democratic. And as he mentioned, in the South Sudan, where you have leaders who may be violating the rights of the people, it is a journey, it's a work in progress. You have to strengthen institutions so that the people themselves can hold the leadership accountable. If I may pop in one issue on the whether economic development comes first or democracy comes first, I am absolutely convinced that it has to be democratic. You have to start with democracy first, because otherwise, who's in charge of the state and where does the wealth that is created end up, in their pockets or elsewhere? You must start with democracy so people can vote out leaders that are corrupt, that they don't like, and they can throw them out, and you must protect elections.
But where do they get that opportunity to be the fundamental stakeholders in their own society? Because
Shaka,
what you have today, frankly, and you can move across the continent, you hear people telling you that their governments, frankly, do not account to them.
Yes.
They account to who they call the development partners. The donor community.
Shaka, that is so true. That is a wonderful question. Here is how I think you have to begin, because yes, power has to reside in the hands of the people. And I think you need civil society who will fight like crazy to insist on institutions, beginning with clean elections. Yes, I mean, here, development partners, the IMF, the World Bank, the donor community, they have their interests, especially countries like the US, the Europeans, they have their interests that they are trying to protect. And frankly, if you look at their history in Africa, they prefer strongmen. I mean, they have actually put it in writing that strongmen are easier to deal with and democracy and parliaments are messy. So it is civil society that has to fight to make sure that the people, power belongs in the hands of the people. And we should not expect the politicians in power to build institutions.
Well, thank you very much. I'll come back to that. A reminder that you are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. If you wish to participate in our discussion, please call us at 202-619-3111. US country code is 1.
There are 4 major organs of the African Union. Number 1, Assembly, which is the supreme organ of the AU and is composed of heads of states and governments or their representatives. It meets at least once a year to monitor the group's priorities and policies. A 2/3 majority is needed to pass a resolution. A simple majority can pass a procedural matter. Number 2, the Executive Council, which consists of ministers of foreign affairs and meets at least twice a year. It primarily determines the issues that are submitted to the Assembly and monitors implementation of initiatives. Number 3, the Pan-African Parliament, which has consultative and advisory powers only, but with the aim of ultimately evolving into an institution with full legislative powers. Finally, the Commission, which is the permanent secretariat of the Union, comprised of a chairperson, a deputy, and 8 commissioners. They are responsible for peace and security, political affairs, infrastructure, technology, and agriculture. The Commission reports to the Executive Council.
We are able to touch on things that are important to people on an everyday basis. We hope that our viewers are getting inspired when they watch our show. They're getting a view of the world from a different perspective, things that perhaps are not in their immediate vicinity. Today, I could put in on the show something that is a little different, a little unique, and this gives me that inspiration to come to work.
If you like today's show, please write and tell us what you think or give us some suggestions. Be sure to tell us what station you're tuned into. Our address, Straight Talk Africa, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue Southwest, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. Or send us an email at africatv@voanews.com. Log on to our website at voaafrica.com. Or post your comments on Facebook. Keywords, Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui. And of course, let's go to the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone callers. Good evening, Idi Abdul from Uganda. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Yes, good evening, Shaka.
I am hugely terrific, Idi. How are you today?
I'm doing well.
So what is your question, sir?
Yeah, my question is, my question is about democracy.
Uh-huh. What is it, please? I'm afraid that Edie is probably not really having it good. At least his technology doesn't seem to be serving him very well. Let me go back to Addis Ababa, Mr. Mwencha. Mr. Mwencha, how do you weigh in from what you have heard so far?
Well, I'm very much grateful to the panel members there for bringing in various perspectives of the discussion that's before us. I just wanted to chip in on one aspect that has been raised, and that is resources for development of Africa. Here I must say that it is not that Africa doesn't have resources. It is again a question of whether glass is half full or half empty.
Now, Africa is very well endowed with resources, but unfortunately we have quite huge leakages. And one of the concerns that the continent is looking at is how can we plug in, you know, these leakages that either go through, you know, transfer pricing or another mechanism. Africa loses close to 50 to 60 billion annually. Now, if you look at aid that is coming to Africa, it's more or less the same. So this is one area that Africa needs to look at, and we need to work with all international community because these resources are not residing elsewhere except in some of the countries to help us bring back these resources to Africa. And then Africa can be able to address this. But leaders in Africa are also conscious of this challenge to see that we start to address, you know, financing the development agenda of the continent through, you know, PPP, private sector participation. But also if you look at the investment that now is being generated, either through bonds and the rest, Africa is addressing the issue of finance itself. Yes, in the case of peace, we don't have some of the technology that we need, and we are grateful to the support that we get, particularly if you are in a theater or in an operation like Central Africa. We need support, logistics, and the rest. But Africa is also investing. We're putting their sons and daughters who are dying in on the battlefield.
Thank
you. That is a clear indication of ownership and commitment.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Idi, are you there now? Idi from Uganda, can you hear me? I'm afraid he's gone. Let me come to you now, Fred, really. I think his point is well made. But there are still certain things that can be done internally. As he says, Africa is not a poor continent. On the contrary, it is one of the wealthiest continents on this planet Earth. Yes, and African leaders have great opportunities because they are now, Africa is like a beautiful girl now. You have China going to Africa. You have Brazil. You have the Americans, the traditional European, former colonial powers, and what have you. How do you respond to some people who say, in fact, Africa's problem is leadership deficit?
You know, my answer to that, and I think Ni and Erastus has also made very important points. There is a role for civil society to do in the building of our democracy, but it has to be African civil society. The civil society at this point has to be able to look at some of these problems and become the vanguard, not only in the African Union, but also in the ECOWAS, not only in ECOWAS, but also locally in the country, so that the gap we have in leadership, you know, it's three people in this room. If we are all three bad people, this room is bad. If we have one good person and two bad people, the room is still bad. When we have two good people and one bad person, this is a good room.
How do you remove the barriers, for example?
Those are the challenges that we as the civil society has to deal with. We have to make sure that in our parliament, there are more good people than there are bad people. There will always be bad people.
But how do you do that?
It is by building institutions that are strong enough to ensure that the constitution becomes the only document that everybody, bar none, has to live with.
Now,
and that's the challenge of even in our democracy, in every democracy in the world, is always work in progress. But without building this institution, and for us to expect that we're going to have democracy by osmosis, is not going to happen. And we should mitigate the expectation of the electorate and the citizens that this is their government, they have to own it, and it's not going to be Fred or Shaka or me that is going to come over to Ghana. It's going to be the Ghanaian civil society that would have to work within the constitution of Ghana to embolden their good leadership to be responsible for the economic development, political development of Ghana.
Thank you. Well, Ni, it looks like, frankly, that there is a lot of talking the talk, but frankly, not walking that talk so that people can walk the walk. You mentioned earlier that a lot of Western countries are interested in having, quote-unquote, strong men.
Yes.
But there is an American president.
Yes.
in 2009,
yes,
who stood in your country,
yes,
the capital of your country, Accra,
yes,
and said, that time is gone. What Africa needs are strong institutions, not strong men. What happened?
What happened is that the United States has had for a long time a bad habit of supporting those they call friendly tyrants. They are very open about it. Right now, we have strong men in Africa, despite what that president said, and that happens to be a president that is the most popular, in my view, on the continent of Africa, because his father was a Kenyan. We are talking about the current American president, Obama, who in June 2009 said Africa does not need strong men, it needs strong institutions. But to this day, the United States still supports African strongmen. We talked about Egypt. There is Rwanda. There is Uganda.
Right.
There is Ethiopia.
Right.
Now, I do think, I mean, Fred is right, of course, that
there's Cameroon, there's Sudan, there's South Sudan.
Exactly.
I mean,
and the international institutions, the IMF and the World Bank, they are looking at economic governance. They used to say they don't even look at democracy. So, frankly, people like us here who are, quote, the African-born in the United States, my actual thinking is that it is up to us to put heat on the governments that we are now citizens of, to whom we pay taxes, that they should not be supporting dictators in Africa. They should support democracy. It is up to us to put heat on Mr. Obama that he should live by the words that he uttered in Accra, that the United States should support the building of institutions and not the support of strong men. Next month, when he brings the 48 presidents here, some of them should not be coming. Some of the people who are getting 97% of votes should not be here, but they have been invited. It is up to civil society.
But maybe they are loved by their people, after all.
Well, that is questionable. Because
now,
we know what democracy looks like. We know what good elections look like.
What about the issue of corruption?
Yes.
A lot of money comes from the continent and is banked in the Western world. And when you hear policymakers talking about corruption in Africa, don't they honestly have a moral responsibility to look at some of the money, for example, that is within their own banks? For example, let me go back to my friend Teodoro Obiang, Equatorial Guinea. At one time, he was literally running Riggs Bank right here in Washington, D.C., and his people do not have enough to eat, despite all the wealth. How do you respond to that, Fred?
Yeah, you know, and you and I live here in Washington, we know what happened. When the legal ramification of what had happened to Riggs Bank, there used to be a bank called Riggs Bank.
People there's that no have no factories in Africa have Riggs mansions bank. In Potomac.
You know, there is due process, and that's one of the platform of the democracy and rule of law that we all are part of. And our due process and building strong institutions do not happen overnight. And if we are looking at democracy, we have to be all believers.
You have 15 seconds.
In all of those values that make democracy, the kind of democracy that we're talking. And that is why, yes, civil society in Africa is going to be the backbone of this transformation that is
on
ongoing.
That note, time is not our best ally, my friend. Yeah. On that note, thanks to our distinguished guest, Fred Oradeinde, president of the Foundation for Democracy in Africa, Ni Akwete, an independent analyst on African and international affairs, and last but not least, Elastus Mwencha, the deputy chairperson of the African Union Commission, who joined us via telephone link from the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. Thanks to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners, we thank you for tuning in. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning, it's Daybreak Africa with James Bate. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning in to Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, please. And remember to keep the African hopes alive.